Welcome to the World of Wisdom podcast. My name is Amit Paul, and today it's just me. I don't quite know what I'm going to talk about, but I do think that I want to do one of those summations and try to look, not necessarily back, take a piece of advice that I got from Leif Edvinsson early on, that we'd never come back to anything. We always come forward to something. That's what I'm doing, I guess. I'm coming forward to something. But I wanted to take this moment to reflect. It is the end of the year. And I wasn't going to do it. And then I looked through the feed of the podcast and I was like, oh my, I've had a lot of really beautiful conversations with a lot of really beautiful people. And perhaps it's time again for me to give it some time for reflections. So that's what I'm doing. It feels like I will talk about at least two things. One will be around hospicing modernity, which is a very central concept for me right now. And the other thing that I might talk a bit about is actually the dance between the masculine and the feminine. That's a topic that keeps kind of popping its head up for me, and it's definitely been present with me over the past year. Not so much in the podcast maybe, but I've been running some really interesting action research on the topic, and I think I have something to say about it. So let's see. This year has really been one of those years for me where I've been stepping into some of my oldest demons, the ones that are really closest to my soul from my earliest years of being alive. And it's been wonderfully difficult. It's unlocked a lot in me. New ways of seeing and being and moving in the world that I didn't think were possible for me, that I didn't think I deserved or had access to. So this was truly a wonderful year for me personally. And a lot of these conversations that I've had on the podcast are helping just to be able to run your particular way of phrasing or framing questions that other people, of course, are also looking at. It's just such a privilege to be able to get something coherent back from all these wonderful people. So I guess the first things first, and that's a big thank you to everybody that's come on, and a big thank you to you who's listening. Right. So, hospicing modernity. It's interesting how that feels like a watershed concept for me. It's taken from a book by Vanessa Andreotti, Vanessa Macato de Oliveira. And she writes this wonderful book with such precision around what hospicing modernity means. And she's arguing that what we live in, and many of the people that have come on the podcast are arguing this, is that what we live in is a global monoculture, a culture that is really pushing and twisting and turning in ways that we can't see or perceive with thought. We have to feel, smell, listen, shift, move, you know, dance with, maybe wrestle with, perhaps, with this thing that's called modernity. Modernity is so ingrained in us. This human supremacy idea that we have, and a particular human too. Things like knowledge. Knowledge is something that comes from science, right? Other people's knowledge or traditions or recipes, whatever it may be, that's not science. That's just tradition. That's just cute. It's just this little thing that other people does. And the fact that, I don't know, taking from my own past, I keep cooking Indian food these days and making dal with lots of ginger and curcumin and like all these spices that people that are starting to claim have all these wonderful benefits. They're just great for our bodies. And yet, that's just cute. It's just random. Just happened to be lucky that it was healthy. That's not knowledge. It's not been proven yet. Well, maybe it has by now. I don't know. Just making a point. This thing that keeps telling us that these are the limits of humans. This is what humans can do. This is what humans are. Humans are greedy and evil and motivated by intrinsic motivations. And we have to deal with them as such. We have to make people, motivate people by making things as easy as possible. Because that's the only way that people and large do this thing. We have to use technology to do all this stuff. We have to incentivize it by using money. Unless we measure it, nothing gets done. The only way to be and act and understand and be motivated in the world are through these external motivating factors. And if that's not the case, then you're just a wonderful human being and you have built up your own intrinsic motivation, whatever it might be. So I'm ranting a bit here, but what I'm trying to say is that all of these stories of how humans are and what we are and what we can do and so forth, I'd argue that a lot of them are moot. They're just cultural constructions. These are things that if you look a little bit to your left or a little bit to your right, you will see examples of people that are doing different things. People that can feel things over long distances, that can heal things over that shouldn't be healable. People that meditate themselves out of this or that, or that run faster than what should be humanly possible, or whatever. I mean, it's so simple, you know, like these examples of, because I love running, I have this 4-minute mile story, which was like, nobody had run a mile under 4 minutes, as far as we knew. And everybody tried and they 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 couldn't do it. And then there were scientists that started making explanations for like, oh, it's not humanly possible. It's like biomechanically we can see, it's sure that we can see on the shape of our bones that we're not supposed to run faster than that because that would be damaging whatever and something and whatever. And then someone did it and I don't know their name. I should have probably Googled it before I told the story, but I didn't. So no name attached to it. Somebody did it. And then within the year, I think 7 people had run the mile under 4 minutes. And now, I mean, now it's like the 2-hour marathon, right? That's not possible. Oh my God. And now we're right there, right on that other cusp of things that aren't possible, that aren't humanly possible. It's not natural. And one could argue that maybe that's the case. You know, it's not natural. Maybe it is actually supernatural. Maybe we are meant to be supernatural. Maybe this notion of humans as a keystone species, as a species that is actually there as a caretaker, that is present in Tyson Yunkaporta's work or present in other people's work. Many indigenous traditions have these stories around the council of the different species where the humans are tasked with looking out for the world, looking out for Gaia. So maybe there is something special about us, but it doesn't warrant for the arrogance that we have acquired within modernity, where everything is ours to take. I actually went through the podcast feed from this year, so I remember everybody that I've talked to. And right now, as I said, ours to take stopped on Geeta Rayan, who is a psychologist and a deep thinker, philosopher, writer, poet. There could be so many epithets around her. I'd recommend that conversation. It's very different from many others, wonderfully different. But she said something like that. Don't take what's not yours. It's as simple as that. Can't take what's not yours. And yet, that's what we're doing. In modernity, that's exactly what we are and have been doing. And so to return to that concept of the hospicing, I mean, I find it's interesting because I find it being a little bit of a watershed between even the people that I work with and talk to a lot and so forth. When I say, well, I believe that we are in the last days of capitalism, We're in the last days of modernity. And I mean that very literally. It doesn't mean that it's going to die or go away tomorrow. It just means that I think that this system is actually crumbling under its own weight. And I believe that in any dying process, there is a possibility to die well, or to die trying to grasp onto whatever one can grasp onto. In order to die well, I think sometimes we need a bit of help. We need someone that can hospice us, care for us, help us let go, not pull everything down. I just had Nora Bateson on the podcast, which was a big moment for me. And she's talking about that idea of the evolution, how absolutely mind-breaking it is that species know what parts to continue and what parts to discontinue. Because that's what evolution is, right? Something continues and something doesn't continue. How do we know? And that could also be true of a death process, right? If you think about it, even in the very literal sense, in the demise of a body, or when the spirit leaves the body, or however you see that, and you stop breathing, and your heart stops beating, your body is continuous in some way, right? It's burnt, perhaps. Or it's put in the ground, and in that ground, things happen. You are fertilized. There is composting happening. And so is it in any process. I've felt it, certainly felt it over this past year, that as I move into my deepest trauma and deepest stories around how the world works and who did what and, you know, who's who wasn't allowed to and I wasn't allowed to and I didn't do that and this happened and that happened and whatever it might have been. But as I deal with those and spend some time with those stories, I find out that there is so much for me to discover there. There's so much locked up energy in those things that I haven't wanted to look at for some time. In a way, it's perhaps what Alexander Crawford and Ylva Björnberg is talking about when they talk about the conversation too, that it's like this invitation, this work that I'm doing right now, which has to do with the transition, which has to do with the transformation of our society. That's where I'm looking at. That's what I'm trying to enact and be an agent in. And for me to be able to feel that same composting, that same transformation, that same mirroring of the outward, so above, so below, right? As above, as below. Isn't that what they say? Happens also in me. And so there is a letting go happening. There is a death happening. And perhaps I'm focused on hospicing modernity because I would like to be hospiced. I would like to be cared for. I would like to know that things are going to be okay. We had that scare. As some of you know, I live in Reykjavik these days. And we had that scare with the volcano here, which is actually gathering again. So that's far from over. But nonetheless, there was a time when they evacuated the entire city, which is still evacuated, because of the risk to the population. And I kind of had a hard time sleeping that night when I realized that, like, hey, this could actually happen. Like, we live on a peninsula of Iceland where there is a volcanic activity. And it's probably going to be going now for a few hundred years. And these volcanic systems, they stretch under us everywhere. And so I was like, oh, what happens if we have to move? What happens if we're evacuated? What happens if the volcano takes our house? Which is, you know, not at all the case. It's completely unreasonable at this point, but eventually might not be unreasonable. And then my wife said something. She's like, well, what about it? If that happens, we just start over. And in a way, it's so profound. It's like, if that happens, we just start over. And we bring the tools that we've learned from whenever. And actually, Darcia Narvaez was talking about it in the end, that the way that we've been cared for, the way that we've been nurtured, the way that we are continuously caring and nurturing for our surroundings are the tools that we bring with us into whatever comes next. And even though we lose our material wealth, or even though we lose this or that, or things didn't turn out the way they were supposed to, or whatever, they turn out. Things happen. Carl Erik Edris actually said that. I don't know if he said it on the podcast or if he just told me, but he said, people are confused about how life works. We are told that we wake up, we open our eyes one day in this long hallway with infinite amounts of doors. And someone says, pick anyone you want. Pick anyone you want. Any one of these lives could be yours. You get to choose. But in reality, what happens is one of the doors open and you're like, oh, that door opened. That's interesting. And you go there and you peek in and you're like, I can't really see anything. And you peek in a bit deeper. And you're like, I have to step in to know anything about what's going on in here. And then as you step in, you move in and then boom, door's closed. You can't open it again. You're like, this is unfair. I wasn't supposed to be in this room. I had all of these options and I was supposed to be somewhere else. And so you can kind of choose there. You get a choice. You can stay by the door and hammer on the door and kind of, you know, tear your fingernails bloody and suffer. Or you can start walking down the path. And it doesn't mean that your path is free from suffering. It just means that as long as you're working on your path, you're doing the least amount of damage that you possibly could. The least amount of suffering that you could possibly cause. The least amount of suffering that you could possibly cause. And in a way, that kind of brings us back again to this idea of the hospicing of modernity. Because it's really tricky right now. Olivia Lazard was talking about it. Jonas Rupier was talking about it. Pelletier was talking about it. Daniel Christian Wall was talking about it. Helena Norberg Hodge. Many, many people are pointing to the challenges that we are standing right up against. Indy Johar was talking about it. Daniel Goetz was talking about it. And many people are working on solutions or working on things to do or bridges into the fog even. I mean, that's what I've been talking about playing with as well, that I build bridges into the fog. So we're all devoted to this idea, this concept of whatever it is that will come after. This idea that Dougal Hine puts so well into words when he says, the end of the world as we know it is not the end of the world, period. The end of the world as we know it is not the end of the world. So hospicing modernity doesn't mean that I'm preparing for the apocalypse. It doesn't mean that things will fall apart, but it does mean that I'm committed to build things that are useful after, beyond. And as you'll notice, I'm not saying beyond what or after what. I don't know that. But build things that are useful after and beyond. Much of that lands in the realm of relationships, actually. At least for me. Those are the things that will remain. And perhaps story will remain. And perhaps there are some ruins that will remain. And those are things that we could build from. Some are speaking in terms of the transition networks that we have mined all of, that we have mined all of the ore and metal and so forth that we would ever need to mine. We could just reconstruct and deconstruct and take from these and recycle and cycle and cycle and cycle forever. We might not ever have to take anything more up out of the earth. I think that's an interesting concept. And it kind of ties into, it's a bit of a stretch, but I'm still going to go there because that was such an important concept in this hospicing work. I think what needs to be looked at is actually the way we look. So like, what are we seeing? And I think I heard Indy Johar from Dark Matter Lab speak of that very well when he talks about the boring revolution, this new way of accounting, us moving towards true cost, where we can talk about quantum accounting or quantum shifts in terms of the resolution of the accounting, where we can get to the point where we can use the AI to ask really good questions and to get a really holistic picture where we can throw computing at all the relationships and all the value exchanges that's happening that are way beyond just the financial capital value that we're looking at the moment, and how that increased resolution is going to make us see the world completely differently. And by seeing the world differently, we're going to be able to relate to the world differently. And that's hopeful. And then you hear Jon Andersson speak of his transformation from the idea of the socio-technical systems, systems of innovation, to systems of transformation. And so, and transformation would require that we at least bring in nature into that equation. So it'd be socio-technical natural systems that we're talking about and dealing with. Also on our balance sheets, also in our accounting. Those are the prerequisites. That's the same thing that, it's an upcoming conversation, I guess, but Ralf Trum is talking about from the R3.0, where we're looking at constraints and boundaries, basically what Kate Raworth has picked up in her Donut Economics. And we have to, we have an operating space where we can move within. And there we have to look at the relational density. We have to look at what we're doing. It's all very exciting if you think about it that way. There are all these possibilities in all these other realms that we haven't been looking at for a while. We have been focused on the material stuff and on the building stuff and on the financial stuff that's related to the material stuff. But what about the other stuff, the spiritual stuff, the relational stuff? The stuff of people, the stuff of animals, the stuff of plants, the stuff of the living. But in order to do that, we must put that back into focus. And that, to me, is what hospicing modernity is about. It's not necessarily about this, although I think there's going to be lots of calamity during the rest of my lifetime, and certainly during the lifetime of my children. That's what I'm preparing for. But although I think that, I think it's a new way of seeing the world. That's where we're invited to when we talk about the hospicing of modernity. In a way, Daniel Goetz talked about it in our conversation. I mean, he's even looking at metamodernity, so he's not necessarily, he might be on the hospicing modernity track or not. I don't know. It's not that important. But he's talking about these four interactions that we have, and the highest form of interaction that would encompass the trade and the violence and the reciprocity is play. All of that is involved there. And I've been feeling it very tangibly in my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practice that I've picked up for some time now. It's quite wonderful, actually, because I was born and raised in a story that if one person isn't playing, then it's inevitable that no one is playing. Then it's for real. Then it's serious. And then when I, as a beginner of like having practiced 9 months or so, get on the mat, doesn't matter how little I'm playing when I go up against, well, yeah, any of the higher belts, because they are playing. They're like, oh, yeah, I'll just strangle you with my little toe. I will use only my knees. I will do, you know, they are playing. And so whatever I'm doing doesn't matter, but it is matter, like how our capacity looks in between ourselves. And so that might be a project. That might be the reason for why I'm practicing in the way that I'm doing. That might be what Paul Weinfeld is talking about when he's talking about the hero's journey. Being a journey of being slayed by the dragon, being childless at 40, being whatever might have been your thing that would never happen, whatever might have been your imagery of failure, whatever that is your hero's journey. That is when you should return with elixir. That's when you realize something about yourself and about the world. The hardship does something to us and in us and around us. And that's the gift. That's a gift. Eugenio Molini says, do your thing and get out of the way. And that really much relates to what I talked about before with Karik Edris' story, right? There are all these things that aren't the way that they look. And in a way, I think play is one of those things. So if I have the capacity to hold myself, if I have the capacity to be in that flow, be in that moment, whatever it might be, then it doesn't matter what the other is doing. If I'm playing, we're still playing. It doesn't matter how serious it gets. If I'm playing, we're still playing. It doesn't matter how much they are trying to kill me. If I have mastery, they can do whatever they want. They cannot hurt me. There is a way there that vulnerability comes into play. So I can be vulnerable. I can use or work with that tool because I am not touchable. I'm untouchable in that way. There's something really interesting about how play could work in that way. And if we can start playing more, then we can have access to trade and we can have access to wrestling, kinetic violence. We can have access to reciprocity. We can have access to gifting. All of these things happen within play. And what we should be focusing on is this idea of the infinite games, right? That we get to keep playing. We get to play another day. That's what we're doing. That's the project that we're on, perhaps. And right now, what I see modernity doing is that it's depleting those possibilities. It's not hyper-modernity. It's not hyper-capitalism. It's not no trade, but it is the singular focus on something. It's a singular metric. It's the singular idea of anything. It's this idea of the problem and the solution. Look at where most of the solutions have gotten us today. Remember that the combustion engine was the solution to the horse shit problem, right? That's it. And then you hear those that are working differently, like Kajsa Balkfors, that Ola so generously invited and helped me hold a conversation with, where we were able to kind of look at what happens when we release kids, when we release preschool children, preschool teachers from the curriculum, when we find the space, when we look close enough, so we find the space between the lines of the law. Didn't deviate from the law. It's just there. There's room. There's whole parts of the dance floor that we aren't looking at because of, drum roll, probably modernity. At least that's my theory. We're so programmed, and that's not how we usually do things, that we miss what's possible to do. So that's my first rant, which was around hospice and modernity. And I'm just kind of speaking around it to see whatever it sparks in you. If you want to come on the train of seeing what hospicing modernity may look like. And, you know, it's a circular thing. When you care for something, you just do whatever it needs. It means that you're relating to whatever it is, but it also means that you're relating to whatever it has to become. And in this case, I think that it has to die. And we have to help it die. And so that might mean imaginal work. It might mean work towards new futures. It might mean letting go of old things. It might mean dealing with your own personal stuff. It might mean dancing, just finding laughter again, finding joy. It might mean decoupling yourself from the narrative of success that you've had and held for such a long time. It might mean accepting your personal power. It might mean surrendering to that you don't know anything. Letting go of your knowledge. It might mean getting just curious, asking those stupid questions that no one is allowed to ask, that you're not allowed to ask, that you haven't allowed yourself to ask. It might mean going really woo, believing in spirits and ghosts, or you go super scientific and go the other way. I do think that what it has in common is that it might mean just going somewhere a little bit unexpected. Somewhere where there's a little bit more space, where you can find relaxation. Even when you have a sweaty 100 and something kilo person on top of you that's trying to smother you, there is a way to relax. And in that relaxation, something shifts. Because if I'm not struggling against him, he's not struggling against me in the same way, and then I can surprise him. There's a movement, there's a moment where I can do something. And that might not be enough to get me out of the pinch, but it's something. And whatever I was after I tapped, I can walk out of there thinking, at least I did something. At least there was a difference. At least something shifted. Who knows? Maybe that's enough in this living, complex, dynamic world that we live in. That might be the butterfly thing, wing, that changed the whole system, that unraveled the whole thing. Who knows? So I do want to kind of touch on the other topic as well that I had imagined for myself, which is around the masculine and the feminine dance. And I've been doing this work with Eric Lichtman, and we've been doing it quite diligently now. We've had a conversation over the past going on 3 years, and had a few groups where we've been exploring it. And then we also held 2 journeys for groups of men and 1 journey for women. And we might do another round for women and perhaps something for both men and women around this exploration of the masculine and the feminine. And the title that we've put for these explorations have been Dissolving the Cage. And what I'm seeing that it's about for me, it seems to be about creation for me. It seems to be about what it could be. What is the other world that we also could be? What is the world that our hearts know is possible? Or something, to paraphrase Charles Eisenstein. And actually what I wanted to say, it's not that long. I think I'm going to start wrapping up because I've been talking for a while now. But nonetheless, I wanted to bring this in. There is this way that the story of the masculine and the feminine is told. This way that fixes people more firmly into whatever they think they are or whatever they desire to be. But it's still a fixing. It's still a sticking of people. And to me, that is what Nora Bateson says when she says the map is not the territory, and like the spoiler as well that she said that the territory always wins, is that no person is a map. Whether you have a penis or a vagina is not the determinant whether you are masculine or feminine. It's not a thing to strive for to be more this or that. Not according to anyone else's map, anyways. And as we know, I mean, maps, especially maps like the masculine and the feminine, are drawn after some sort of probability. It's like a heuristic. It's something that we choose to look at for some reason. And maybe it fits, maybe it doesn't fit. One of those images that we've been playing with in the work that we've been doing, Eric and I, has been the image of clothes that don't fit anymore. Things and habits and perceptions that don't fit you anymore, that you could just as well just drop, get rid of. They're about to rip anyways. There's no point for you to put them on and constrain yourself with them. Just undress. So what I'm curious about is this idea that people have that the feminine is this way, and therefore I should be, as a woman I should be, is it because I want to be more woman? I've been so masculine for so long that now I need to be as a woman, and as a woman I need to be this, I need to be chaotic, and I need to be that. I can't be structured, and da 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 da. There are all these judgments that come with trying to fit into the map, even though it's just, you know, it might be perfect to try on something new. I'm not saying stay as you are. I'm just saying, like, once you've tried it on, make sure to check in and see how it made you feel, who it made you. And after having practiced something particular, in particular for a while, then make sure to move out of that. Because anything can become a habit. I remember when I was in the music industry a million years ago, and I mean, even that life, which was so extreme, hotel to hotel, travel to travel, fans, press, media, all of that, that also became a habit. I wasn't paying attention. After a while, in the beginning, it was very exciting as you were learning, but you know, the most extreme things can become habits. It's like the monkeys when they go up and they get electrocuted or like shocked with water or whatever. And then after a while, you know, they switched all the monkeys, but the culture says, don't climb the ladder and don't grab the bananas because then everybody's going to get pain. And that lives in people, in the memory. There's the same thing I see with the masculine and the feminine. I think it's wonderful to take part in all of this wisdom that is there, all of these traditions that are there. It's wonderful to read all this stuff and find out what's possible and read outside of your own culture then, speaking of modernity and so forth, but like really to find out what's possible and then let it go. I think Nora said something like that. Be aware of whatever comes next. Don't expect to see it because you're not going to see it. It's going to come from some other direction that you didn't expect at all. So we do need to kind of relax. And so where the work has been going with the masculine and the feminine has been much more towards our relationship to the other. Whatever is other to me, how do I relate to that? Whatever is other to you, how do you relate to that? Do you try to protect yourself or your family from the other? Is that protection hard? Is it brittle? Is it thick? What is it? There's been this question that I've shared a couple of times, I think, in LinkedIn posts, and or two, three questions actually, that I found are really profound, that's been emanating from this work, that are, I think, really central to this work of the masculine and the feminine. And they has to do with devotion and protection. So here it goes. What are you devoted to that you're not protecting? What are you devoted to that you're not protecting? What are you protecting that you are not devoted to? What are you protecting that you are not devoted to? And finally, what if you would only protect what you are devoted to? That line of questioning just leads me back to Carl Erik and his story about the way the world works and how we can walk our path. And walking our path doesn't mean no suffering. It just means the minimum amount of possible suffering for us. And that would go for each and every one of us, actually. If all of us did that, then all of us would suffer less. So, your relationship to other, your relationship to protection. I mean, I've known for myself that I've been protecting things that I didn't need to protect, things that my parents taught me to protect that didn't have anything to do with me, things that I learned to protect in my early years that also I have no need to protect anymore. They don't matter to me anymore. They were really important at some point, but they're not anymore. So there is a discovery that has to happen around what we do need to protect. And there's a discovery around what is generative to us. And some things are going to fall on the spectrum. That's what I'm talking about. Some things are going to fall in certain maps. Some of those maps are going to be around the masculine and the feminine. Other things are not going to fall within those maps. You're going to be in the opposite category, in the opposite end. But it doesn't matter because it matters. What it seems to matter is what you other, what you include, what you are able to hold as a capacity for yourself, what you can explore and harness in a creative way, which is the energy, the friction, the tension, the whatever it might be that will allow you to move faster, more, deeper, longer, further, whatever. And what are the energies that will hamper you, that will hold you back, that will release you, that will make you turn from your path and start heading back towards the door from which you came into, that are now locked for, that's now locked forever. Right? So there's a question there around the masculine and the feminine where I think, where my suggestion is that learn, look at it, but then don't take anybody else's map and try to fit into that like old clothes that don't fit you anymore. Then it's time to relax, to dance, to get turned on, turned off, to lean in and float with the stream. Let go of the edge. let go of the whatever. Just be, a pebble. Be a pebble and look how far that pebble takes you. If you happen to be a pebble that lands on ice, that's not going to happen. Not much is going to happen, probably. If you happen to be a pebble that lands in water, those rings are going to spread. It might not be very obvious in a stormy ocean or a stormy lake, but in a still lake, probably cover the whole lake. Doesn't mean just because you're in stormy waters or on ice or whatever that your influence is less. Just means that your context is different. It's more subtle. It's for you to pay attention. And if we're stuck looking at a map like the masculine and the feminine, then you're not doing the work. You're just distracted again. So that was one of the things that I wanted to say about the masculine and the feminine. And the last thing that I wanted to say about the masculine and the feminine is the way that we've been playing with this has been, and are going to keep playing with it, is this map of four forces. So there's a masculine yang, feminine yin. Those are the ones that we know. The masculine yang is the quality that's like penetrating, it's directed, oriented, forceful, goal-oriented, you know, sets a target, just gets going, bam, 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 bam. The feminine yin is the motherly, caring quality that we kind of associate with the feminine when we talk about it. But then there are two other ones. The other ones are the feminine yang, which is sort of the force of nature, which is that thing that returns things to original place. It's the chaos. And in order for that to appear, you need to have the masculine yin, which is a holding masculine. Masculine that creates a space for her to come into life, come into the world. And so the last thing that I'll say, because I said that for me, this has been about creation. So one thing is a wish that you just follow the maps, look at the maps, but then as you move in the territory, as you move in your life, as you behave, as you do things, just let go of the map. The second thing is this. I propose that this is how things are created. And this is, I'm going to have to say it in a sequence because I can't say it at once. But it's not a sequence. It's more a weaving. It's more a interbeing, interaffordance of these four forces. It's not one first and the other last. It's just like wherever you start, you start. It's like the plaything. If you start somewhere and you're doing that, then the others become available to you. So it doesn't matter which end you start in. But I'll start with the feminine yang, because that seems to be the power that's been locked out, especially of modernity. A lot of the Christian, modern, capitalist construction is to lock out chaos, lock out the unexpected, lock out the unpredictable thing that returns thing to its original place, the force of nature that she represents. The women around me, I have access to it too sometimes, but some women around me seem to have a lot of this, to be able to tap into that edge of the chaos. But for them to do that, for them to be that, to channel that, to move that, let it move through them rather, to be of service to that thing, they need a space held. So they need the masculine yang. It's not a caring space necessarily. It's just space. It's just dance floor. It's just a part, you know? It's like if you're in a dance battle and then you create the floor, you move towards the other people so that they back up and then you have space to move and dance. That's what's needed for the feminine yang to appear. Masculine yin is absolutely necessary for the feminine yang to appear. But for him to be able to hold that space, he needs to be nurtured and cared for. He needs to be safe. That masculine yin energy requires safety, requires an okayness, being accepted, not shamed, not powerful. in order for him to be able to hold that space and not want anything, to surrender himself to her, the feminine yang, the life force, he needs to completely surrender to her and surrender himself, allow for himself to be consumed by her, if that is what needs to happen. And in order to do that, he needs to be cared for. And that's where the feminine yin comes in. That's where she is holding him. So although the feminine yang is at the center and the masculine yin is making space, the feminine yin is, again, a prerequisite for him to be able to hold that space. The caring, the okayness, the softness, the warmth, the uncompromising, the unconditionality that she has. And in order for her to be all of that, she needs to be provided for. She needs to be safe, actually safe. And that's where the masculine yang comes in, the providing, the directed, the making sure, the clearing the way, the ripping up the heavens and the earth for her, for the healthy expression of the caring mother. All of that needs to happen at the same time. And that would be the sequence of creation as well. Well, actually, no, that wouldn't be the sequence, but that would be where creation happens in a healthy way, where these things, these forces can dance, and where there's an oscillation between them and whoever carries them, regardless of what gender you identify with or have, regardless of what genitals you have attached to your body. That is the precondition for what needs to happen. So what have we talked about? I talked a long while about the hospicing of modernity and that project that I'm on. And then we spoke about the masculine and feminine dance and the proposal. And I wonder what happens in you when you hear me say that, that it is a map as any other map. It's a useful map, absolutely. But it's also just a map. So whenever you move in your life, just get off of the map, move into third territory. And secondly, once you have get rid of the map, then maybe instead of phrasing the map as the masculine and the feminine, maybe take a look at it as the relationship to the other. Whatever is other to you, whatever lives as on the other side of whatever to you. And then finally, this proposal of how creation happens. What are the four forces of creation that needs to be coexisting, interbeing, inter-affording one another? For creation to happen, life-driven creation, chaotic creation, where we have to surrender to the inevitable, where we have to be in service to the larger thing, which is life, the mystery, where we are willing to sacrifice ourselves, but we're also willing to have pleasure, to follow our desire, to follow that life-giving impulse. So, this wasn't at all what I had imagined to do. I would imagine I would have gone through all the names and the people that I've talked to and so forth. But they are there in this conversation, in this discovery. I'm curious what it does to you. So if you feel like reaching out, send me a PM or an email or whatever, please do that. I have a new webpage out if you want to check that out at amitpaul.com. Otherwise, I'm looking forward to spending another year with you. I'm really grateful to have this platform, to be able to do this, to have these conversations and bring them to you and have people listen to it. It's important to me. I appreciate it that you're there. And with that, just wishing you a good end of a year, good continuation of a new year, a good new year. Yeah, I think that's it. See you soon.